All right, Investor Plus is officially live, and it's everything you've been waiting for.
We're talking AI power networking to connect you with other investors who are serious about building their portfolio, not just dreaming about it.
You'll get access to Market Master Her, our step-by-step ebook that'll help you master any market, and an on-demand real estate fundamentals course that'll help you build your confidence. And nationwide chapter access, exclusive discounts worth over $6,000, and a 21-day meditation guide because, hey, balance is key. When preparing for a sale, many investors focus way too much on selling their properties and miss the opportunity to prepare to sell their business.
In today's episode, we have Elaine Eason, who has sold multiple businesses. We're going to break down how can you position yourself to step out of your business if you wish to, or to sell it to the highest valuation possible. We're also talking about what you should look for when buying other businesses.
Welcome to the Investor Podcast. I'm Liz Faircloth.
And I am your co-host, Andressa Gadelli. Many women real estate investors have built a very successful portfolio. But unfortunately, they're not running their business as a business, one that they can step away from if they choose to, or sell it for a profit. So, Elaine, for those women that are listening to us right now, and they're like, well, that's me. What are the next steps for them? We don't want to complicate things, but what are the next quick, simple steps? Maybe not so simple, but they can take it. They can start thinking about it and considering as they're moving towards building a sustainable business.
Yeah, that's a good question and a very common pitfall, regardless if it's managing a portfolio of real estate or running any kind of business, is that pitfall of the entrepreneurial personality is that you want to be involved in everything. A lot of people tend to be really hands-on, and it creates a human risk. So if you want to sell your business or just have a better quality of life, really going through your involvement in the business is going to be a good first step. So tracking kind of what are you actually doing? What are your tasks that you're doing on a repeat basis? And what can you outsource? Can you get an assistant? And ideally somebody that is transferable should you want to sell that business or portfolio in the future, so that you have a really nice packaged up kind of like self-sustaining business to hand on to a new owner, and it's not reliant on you and your skill set.
You said an important word and something that Andres and I learned a lot about through a really powerful workshop that we went to and very familiar with, key man risk. Can you define that for everyone listening? Because we can kind of get what that means, but I want to hear it from your perspective so everyone listening can really get what that is.
Yeah. So key man risk means that the business is dependent on one person and their skill set, their expertise. So it, like in the real estate world, like you have all the criteria for deal sourcing. You are in charge of that. You're the only one that holds that knowledge and that expertise. That's going to be hard for someone else to replicate, and it's going to be seen as a risk. So kind of figuring out what those things are to be able to outsource to someone, even just like piece by piece, it doesn't have to be all at once, is going to really make a big difference.
I want to emphasize, when we went to this workshop with Alex and Leila Hormozi, and they explained exactly that lenders or whoever is evaluating brokers your business, they're going to look at that line item and they're going to access the risk, meaning they're going to be putting a number or a percentage that is going to show your business is a high risk. And the bottom line that I want all of you that are listening to understand is that if you have high risks in several line items, the value of your business is down to the drain or even zero. Many, many people that were there were like, well, according to that, the value of my business actually is zero, because if I die today, my business dies with me, right?
Yeah.
So for all the women that are listening, if you die today, what happens? And Liz and I are talking about it, like, what is at stake? For all the women that are saying, well, but I know where things are. I know where whoever is going to inherit your business, right? are they inheriting a business that they can continue running, or they are getting a bomb that is about to explode? And the reason why I'm bringing this up to all of you is that we know all the hard work, sweat and tears that you put into it. So what is at stake is that you're going to be losing it, not in your generation, but probably on the next generation, if you don't put those systems and process in place. Elaine, have you seen from your experience buying and selling different businesses that issue from like one generation to the other?
Oh, for sure. And, you know, you mentioned if you die tomorrow, what happens? I mean, that's a really real scenario that we see in the M&A world. Like that happens. And, you know, everyone is so focused on the day-to-day or the growth or the next big thing that getting those processes in place and getting things documented at a very, very baseline, documented where everything is, what you do, how to run the business is like kind of step one and super, super important. So like when it comes to selling a business, risk is probably the biggest thing that buyers are looking at. They're looking at the risk on top of several other factors to determine what the business is valued at.
So when you're looking to, you know, you have your business right now, you have your portfolio, and you're looking at it and saying, what's the risk factors? I think that could be hard sometimes because you're in it, right? And you're like literally you're the solopreneur. And we see that so many times. Women are the solopreneur. They're going to get the items at Home Depot. They're meeting with the contractors. They're finding the next deal.
I want to kill them when they say that.
I know. They're structuring the deal. They're holding on to the toilets, right? So they're doing it all. How can someone begin the process?
Yeah.
Really evaluating, I should say, their own risk.
Yeah. And it's going to depend on the type of business. So if we're talking about real estate portfolio, those criteria are going to be a little different than another type of business. But the key man risk, as we talked about, is, of course, obviously one thing there. And the other thing is diversification is a very common one. Like where's your income coming from? Like how is it a portfolio of properties? Is it smaller? Is it bigger? The bigger, the less risky that's going to be. And also stability. Like have you made a lot of changes? Has there been a lot of just kind of like recent things that have either for better or worse, impacted your financials and your income? And if so, that's going to be a risk factor because buyers are looking for stable. They're looking for things that have shown a long history of stable income, operating at kind of similar levels. They're looking for something that's predictable.
I like that because for all the women that are listening, you can think about your asset class, right? If you are 100% in short-term rental, right? That might, depending on who is buying, right? Might be perceived as, okay, you're putting all your chips in one asset class. Also market, right? Is you're all in Florida and the coast of Florida. All your Airbnbs are in the coast of Florida. Well, 10 years from now, not sure if that's going to be a reality, right? So you're also trying to mitigate all of this. One thing that you talked about that I want to go a little bit deeper, that it's about the teams, right? And that is one of the other items that was brought up to us is like, okay, who do you have it? How long do you have them? And I think that when it comes down to like property management company, right? You're trying to sell it, but you have a brand new property management company that came to your business 2 months ago. That's very different from a property management company that have been working with you for the past 7 years. So I think that when people are evaluating business, and Elaine, what they're looking for is like a recurring team, recurring process, and diversification. So not
recurring income too.
Recurring income, right? Oh, just right. And I think that when people are presenting the deal, they present the best of it. So when you start looking at track record, how back do you usually go to see, okay, this is a recurring stable business, or this is just a fluke here that happened in the past 6 months to 12 months? How back do you go?
I'd say the last 2 to 3 years are the most important to look at, but buyers will look at all the history you have. If you have, you know, 10 years of history, well, that's better. That's a lot better than two.
And when I'm looking at 10 years of history, right? When I look at my business is completely different than 5 years ago. So it's like that didn't even exist. So when we're looking at different types of business that started 10 years ago, how is the comparison to what it is right now? Because the technology changed, so much changed. People are able to work remotely and depending on the situation, that was not the case before. Are you saying that the data is important from one angle of like history, but not necessarily comparing like apples to apples?
Yeah, I think the value is showing that your portfolio or your business has stood the test of time, has survived different market cycles, different disasters, who knows what. But the longer that you've survived, you've been able to make it work, you're still profitable today, it shows resilience.
I'm thinking about it with the hat on of buying a property, like a large multifamily, which is a business in and of itself. And I hear you on all those pieces. But the other thing that we look for is opportunity, right? How can we squeeze more, you know, lemon juice out of the lemon, if you will? Is there, what's the upside potential here? And so is that the same thinking when you're buying a, like another type of business? Or am I thinking more in a way that's not as, because you're saying stability is critical, but is it stability with opportunity and upside potential?
Yes, exactly. Like the ideal business that people are looking for that's going to get a lot of attention is something that's been relatively stable, but there's still fruit on the tree. Like they've gotten lazy. They've just kind of let things kind of ride out and it's still doing really well. Like it's shown that things are still going well, but there is a lot of room still for a buyer to come and improve things. Because that's going to be less risky because it's like, okay, even though, you know, the owners have been checked out, everything's fine, but there's still all these room for opportunities that the owners just haven't had the time, energy, money to pursue.
Yeah.
When I think about real estate, I think people say, oh, I'm selling the asset itself. And I think they're missing an opportunity to sell the business and the structure of it. If there's none behind, it's just a missing opportunity. So majority of the deals that I come across that are like portfolio deals is that Johnny has bought those properties for dirt cheap and held onto them for a quite long time, receive payment from tenants in a brown bag. The receipts are in a shoebox, right? So all those things, there's no business there to be sold. Yeah. And I think that we want to shine the light to all the women that besides the asset, you also can sell the business, the structure of it. But if we are buying, let's go on the other side, right? If we are buying it, how do we evaluate when it's an opportunity from a trap, Elaine? Because I don't want to get something, oh, I see the opportunity here. Or, oh, that's a red flag. I should be backing out of this situation. So how do we differentiate one thing from another so that we don't waste time?
Yeah, it's research, research, research. When it comes to evaluating opportunities, do not buy the first thing that you analyze. Analyze a lot of deals. Like do your diligence. Know the markets that you're buying in really well. Like take your time. Do not just take things at face value. That's my biggest advice. I do have background in real estate, but not a ton of M&A experience in real estate in terms of selling portfolios. So my experience there is a little bit limited, but I can definitely speak to what I know buyers are looking for because they're really definitely universal factors, regardless of the business type, that make a difference. And I wanted to add something about like if you are trying to sell your portfolio in the future, because we kind of talked about some of these factors, but I feel like there's a balance because it's like you want there to be opportunity and you want to be able to showcase that opportunity. And I think it's really important when you come to selling that you put yourself in the eyes of a buyer. So sometimes I have sellers come to me and they want everything buttoned up, like really, really buttoned up to the point that you're glossing over those opportunities. You don't want to do that. Like if you have totally dropped the ball on something, you've just put off this major opportunity to renovate these units or whatever, for whatever reason, like you want to highlight that. You don't want to just brush under the rug and treat it like your resume where you want everything to look like you did everything perfectly. And so it's a balance of doing that, but also you don't want all your receipts in your shoebox because you want things to be verifiable and you want there to be a level of trust that, you know, the numbers that you're showing, you have data to back it up. Like you got to be buttoned up to a certain degree, but not overly polished that you are disguising those opportunities.
I see a lot of brokers bringing some button up, like so polished. And that is also like raise a flag to me. And I'm like, if it is so, so good, why are you selling?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's just like, so I love what you're saying because either way, it has to have a balance and where you own the opportunity, you don't need to really like turn it down so people can get deals out of it. But how people are presenting it, I want to get your opinion on the presentation piece, the track record of it. I have seen either like very low information that you're like, I have 10 questions here that you didn't propose anything. There's like missing pieces of this puzzle here that I don't know even if you don't have it or you strategically omitted that. And the other side, there's like long, it looks like a testament, like long explanation of everything. And you're like, I don't have the time to go through 85 freaking pages of this deal. Can somebody do some work and say prioritize here? Now they're like sharing the everything, even things that don't apply anymore. And there's attachments, then there's PDFs, then you're like, oh God.
Yeah.
Have you like, is it me? Was I the one getting lucky with those folks sending those things?
It's definitely a balance, right? Like if you're the seller, it's a balance of providing enough information up front that your key points are highlighted and not lost in too much information. And then as a buyer, it's kind of like you're, you know, unfortunately you got to work with the cards you're dealt there. And so, you know, will ChatGPT summarize this for me or, you know what I mean? Figure out a way, get somebody to help you so that you're saving your time to analyze those deals that have a ton of information, but don't be afraid to ask questions. If they haven't given you what you need, like don't make assumptions. Get to the bottom of those core pieces of information to make an informed decision.
So for women that are listening that have a portfolio, right? They're getting some tips on, okay, structuring it for the future, whether I leave it to my kids or I really have a sellable business, not just a portfolio. As I'm moving towards that, buying a business that's unrelated to real estate per se is intriguing to them. A lot of women have come to us in our community. They want to do something a little diversified in the sense away from real estate, in addition to obviously their core business. So what do they need to start to ask themselves? You know, what are the hot industries? Because the things that I would say, I'd be like, no, that you don't want to just go to the hot markets because then you're going to overpay.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what is the first couple of questions they should be asking themselves if that is something in their, you know, next 1 to 5 years or however long goal set that they actually want to buy a business that's a little different than what they're doing right now.
Yeah. I think the number one thing is, what is your skill set? Like, where is your value add? What are you good at? And finding a business that has opportunities that align with that. So like maybe you have a background in digital marketing or you're really, really good with numbers and you can find efficiencies by digging through financials. You're a really good manager and the business really needs to be outsourced and build a team, something like that. Identifying where your core strengths are and then having a little bit of an open mind with the type of business in which that can apply, at least when you're initially doing your deal analysis. It's my first thing I would say.
What are the business that they should stay away from regardless if they love talking to people? Restaurants, for example.
Yeah. If you're moving to a new industry, you need to be really careful about what you take on. So avoid a business that has low margins. So like in the online business world, anything under 15%, definitely anything under 10% net margins, that's doesn't give you a whole lot to play with. Of course, there are exceptions if the margins are low because they just have way inflated overhead costs. Like you know, that may be something to dig into, but just kind of as a quick and dirty rule, be careful of those margins. And also be careful of acquiring anything that's distressed or has downward trends, if it's something that's totally new to you, because you need time to figure out how to run that business. And if the business is declining, the valuation for online businesses in particular, and any business, is typically based on a multiple of your last 12 months net profit, or what we call SDE. You get to add back one-time expenses or owner benefits to that number. But it's going to be similar to your adjusted EBITDA. But if the business is declining and it takes you a long time to just get a grasp of what you're doing day to day, much less turn the ship around, the value of the business after 6 months is going to be lower than what you paid when you bought it, just by the nature of how valuations work. So you want to be really careful about taking on something that is new to you if the trends are not good. I'd find something that is stable, that still has some opportunity for growth, that you can take your time to get a grasp on.
I think that's so important. I know, and Justin's probably going to say the same thing that I'm about to say. But as a real estate investor, I mean, we've been investing for forever, many, many, many years. Can't see my gray hair. And one thing you're always looking for is distressed property, right? You're looking for a property in a sense, not always, but a very common strategy is buying something that's distressed so that you can really add the value of the, you know, to the property. Increase obviously your net operating income and be able to have a stable asset. So you're doing the stabilization, right? Obviously, that's an undertaking, whether it's a small property, large property. But what you're saying is very interesting in the sense how much distressed, because it's not just a property that needs some new shutters and it needs a new X, Y, and Z, but it's a business that has multiple layers of distress. So I think that's a whole different level than what I think a lot of the women that are more real estate oriented might be thinking. And I think that's a very astute point, especially for real estate investors, because we'd be like, oh my God, I could do so much here. Well, actually, that's a red flag. So that's a really, really, you know, good point you're saying.
Yeah. And it is a big opportunity, definitely. But it's easy to get in over your head, especially if it's something that you don't know. You don't know this business. It's not... Real estate often has a little bit of a playbook. It's like, these are the things you need to do to get it back on track. In brick and mortar and online businesses, there's a million factors and a million things that you kind of got to keep track of. And if you don't know everything, you don't have that direct experience, you just need to be a little bit careful. If you find somebody, if it's a really good opportunity and it's an industry that speaks to you, the opportunities align with what your skill sets are and you really want to do it, just find somebody that has that industry experience to partner with and bounce, you know, ideas off of before taking something on like that.
I think it's important to emphasize, like, what role am I playing here, right? Am I playing the buyer role or the seller role? In any industry, if I'm going to sell it, I'm going to maximize and optimize my business to be able to do that. Sometimes it's worth to invest time into reducing the risk in order to sell it 5 years down the road for a much higher profit than if you sell it right now. If you don't need to, if you need to, then you're in a rough position that you have to sell the business considering all the risk factors, then your valuation is going to be lower than if you address those issues and then sell it in the next five years. Now, if I am a buyer, I am looking for opportunities. Elaine, correct me if my thought process is off, but let's say mom and pop HVAC business, right? What I'm looking, I have no idea about HVAC, but I use HVAC and I know everybody needs it. No matter where the market is, everybody needs it. So it's a business that I would be interested in. So I don't care about their systems and processes internally. I would see the lack of a CRM and certain things as an opportunity, because that's where I come in and like, oh my gosh, we can totally, with this list of clientele that they have for the past 40 years that is on this book here, on this paper or whatever that is, how can we market to them? How can we elevate the marketing piece and adjust? I'm looking for that book. If they have it, that's great. They have the trust. And they have a team that have been working with them for years, and they already know how to do it and everything else. I see the opportunity there where I can come in and bring it to date, bring it to up to speed to the current ways of marketing and selling and communicating to clients. But I see their database and their team as a positive factor. Even if Johnny passes away per se, that is a negative. But am I thinking the right way in terms of like, and the reason why I'm saying this is because my core genius is in systems and process. So I will come in with that piece to fulfill. So I guess it depends on what your core genius is and what you bring in or out. The evaluation might change from the buyer perspective as well.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Because the buyer is applying, like you're the buyer, you're applying your own. You're running your own projections based on the levers that you think you can pull with your skill set. So for you, you see a huge opportunity, like me, systems and processes. And like, that's not necessarily my core skill set. I might not see that. I'm evaluating my value add from a marketing perspective, let's say. So that might be different. Maybe they're already doing pretty good on marketing. And I'm like, yeah, this is a great business, but I don't know how much more I can add to it. So that's where every buyer is going to be applying their own kind of slant in terms of what makes sense for them to pay, what's their goals in terms of returns, what they think is going to be realistic.
I want to bring a point that is a little parallel, but I'm going to bring it up regardless. So as of now, we are March 2025. Pepsi just announced that they are buying Poppi for, I think, $1.2 or $1.6 billion. And I think it was a couple of months ago that there was a lot of backlash with Poppi with a influencer promo that they did. And Damon from Shark Tank, he came and he was saying, I bet somebody is looking to buy Poppi right now. And they want the negative press to be influencing it so they can pay less. So their evaluation, they can say, well, but look, your perception in terms of people right now is less, so they can acquire less. And then he brought up a lot of other women capital ventureless and investors that are saying that women-owned businesses have low evaluation compared to men. Based on what they were seeing, right? Your experience on that, have you seen any difference, or how can we shine the light on those types of deals? And this is just happening, right? I don't think 1.2 or 1.6 really is a low evaluation. Who knows, right? Where it was before and what it is right now. Who knows? If it was 5 billion and now it's at 1.2, well, that affected, right? But we will never know this, but that's what was happening in the back. And how have you seen evaluations when it comes down to women-owned businesses?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think it depends on the industry more than just the fact of something being women owned. And I mean, I have a small sample size of what I work with over the last few years. I don't see a significant difference between women owned businesses and men owned businesses. That's not a factor that I really see coming down to it. if anything, sometimes maybe that plays in our favor that they're like, oh, I could do better than this woman's doing. Some people have that
great
attitude,
to hear.
You know?
Yeah. I'm glad to hear. It's not the experience that the women were venture capitalists were saying, but it's great to hear. Are those from more of a online businesses that you have seen similar evaluation?
Yeah, definitely. And it's just like a lot of people see it as an opportunity and make assumptions. You know, I'm speaking in generalities. This does not apply across the board, of course. But, you know, it's like, oh, well, like a lot of women, they have kids. They're so many. I've talked to women that are doing incredible things, like managing a business, homeschooling 3 kids. Like, how are you? Do you sleep? Like really people doing incredible things and they're doing amazing. And then people see that as an opportunity. It's like she's been able to build this business to this level while doing all these other things in our life, it's like, I have more time than she does. Where can I take this business? I see that a lot. But I'd say, like, I do see impacts on multiples when it's a business that is really tied to a specific demographic. And it's not just women, that is definitely one of them, but anything that's like textured hair care products. I had a business like that, Middle Eastern market online, things that are like really tied to a specific demographic. Those are going to have a little bit lower valuations because the buyer needs to understand that demographic. That's a core part of the business. You're going to have a smaller buyer pool. So that's going to impact how much buyers are going to be willing to pay.
That's good. And sometimes it's an opportunity to teach the buyers, right? Because we have heard that women is a niche. And we have brought data to the table to show that women is not a niche, like 1 billion over the power that women own right now. It's far from being a niche. So I think that there's a lot of education that if I am selling a business, I need to bring back that up with data and really share what are the demographics, where are the potential of expansion. So you can kind of like play your case to it, so they don't let their assumptions come and play to the on the table.
Yeah. And so much of what we talked about too is applicable even if you're not ready to sell your business or portfolio tomorrow. Because quite honestly, the biggest complaint is time and energy. So what if you could control it and manage it in a way that you could sell it, not that you have to sell it? I think that's a key kind of mindset shift, right? That we need to all kind of embody so we can live life on our own terms and not be beholden to a business or a portfolio. That's the dream that everyone has when they buy or start a business. Yet it's the opposite for many people, right? They're beholden. They are the business, and it was never what they thought about or wanted. So this is so applicable, right? If you're ready now or 20 years, it's a way of being. It's a mindset as well. So it's not just a tactical strategy. So great stuff, Elaine. Where can everyone listening follow you on your journey and learn more about you?
Yeah, you can find more about me through QuietLate. So I work as a broker at QuietLate. So you can visit quietlate.com. We have a podcast blog with a ton of more information. You can reach out to me through there as well. My email is elaine@quietlate.com.
Awesome. All this information you guys can find on our show note. Elaine, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having me. It's been great chatting with you both.
Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to receive updates on our next interviews, go to our website, therealestateinvestor.com. There, you can subscribe to our show, become part of our investor community, and get updates on upcoming episodes.
If you like our show, please share with other women who would benefit. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, we encourage you to take one action as a result of today's show and put it into motion so you can live both a financially free and balanced life. Thanks for spending time with us.
Ciao.